We usually start with just introductions, your name, and where and when you were born. And we usually, you know, just go around and introduce, and then we'll start with the talking. So if you'd like to start, that'd be great.
Well, I'm Velma Trimley, and I was born in 1921 on a farm 10 miles northwest of Boise City here. And I'm still on the farm where I was born.
1921, Boise City. All right.
I am Odalee, O-D-A-L-E-E, all one word. B-O-H-N, Bon. I was born February the 6th, 1916. I was born at Garlington, Oklahoma, which was a town about 15 miles southeast of Boise City.
Garlington?
Garlington, G-A-R-L-I-N-G-T-O-N.
And it's not there anymore, is that correct?
No, it hasn't been there for years and years and years and years. But it was there in the homestead days.
How did you end up in Garlington?
Well, that was the post office. I lived on a farm south and east of Garlington. But that was our post office.
And you were in a rural area? You grew up on a farm?
I grew up on a farm.
Did you grow up on a farm as well?
Yeah, on the, like I said, the same farm.
That you live in or live on right now? And not very far away from each other either, it doesn't sound like. But you lived 10 miles one way and you lived 15 miles the other way.
But later we moved about 20 miles southeast of Boise City. And that was where my grandfather homesteaded in 1906 before this was a state. And I lived there until I was married.
My folks, they homesteaded in 1906. My father's folks. They were three brothers, and they come back out and homesteaded in 1906. And then my mother's, that'd be my maternal grandparents, wouldn't it be? They homesteaded in 1906, and they moved on just a quarter west of where my father homesteaded. And of course they had two daughters, and later the two daughters married they met and married.
Well, what was life like for you growing up on a farm? You remember?
I enjoyed
yes,
it.
And we loved it. I tell you, we were homesteaders' daughters. And back then, the family did all the work on the farm. I was the oldest in the family. I never done anything inside the house until I was 17 years old. I did everything out on the farm with my father. And my mother said, you've got to go and hire somebody this summer because Odalee's got to learn how to cook and take care of the house.
Does that sound
well, I familiar? Didn't work out. They raised broom corn and maize, and I worked in the house and helped with the harvest and all that.
So you learned to cook and clean early on while you were outside.
Yeah, but I learned it when I was 17, and I had to do the family work and help with the farm work when I married.
I had to milk the cows when they was in the field. I had to do that and separate the milk and that.
Was there something special about being the daughter of homesteaders as opposed to somebody who came in later? I mean, was that a source of pride for
yes.
you?
Yes. The two things that the homesteaders did when they came to Cimarron County, two things that was very important to them was education, and the other one was a church. And they built schools around over the country. They had little small districts. Mm-hmm. At one time, they had 62 school districts in Cimarron County.
62.
And the parents then when they built the schoolhouses after it became a state, and they got the money for schools, then the older people in the community would go, and they would arrange for a school building. And then we had church in the school building until they could get a pastor to come in. And in 1918, a pastor came to our community. And it was great. The country was practically all grass. A homesteader only had 40 acres that he plowed up, and the rest of it. And some of the people that come didn't like it, and they'd leave. And then we kids would go out and herd the cows out on the open range and bring them in. And for that reason, it was just great growing up as a homesteader's kid. And then when we got the churches, that was the two things. And that's pretty much the same at this county now. It's education and schools and the churches.
Mm-hmm. Mrs. Trimbley, do you have any special thoughts on being a homesteader's daughter?
Well, I was always proud to be homesteader's daughter.
Yeah.
And my grandfather, Alfred Leedy, she's talking about the church. They had called a Leedy schoolhouse then, and like the people, he was superintendent of the Sunday school in that Leedy schoolhouse. And later they moved to Boise City, and then he was the one that helped started the Methodist Church here in Boise City.
Just another example of church and schools.
Yeah, it was that. To me, that's what made. I'd say the 5-state area around here, southern Colorado, eastern New Mexico, and then over into Texas County, and about 3 counties down in Texas Panhandle. It was the same group of people. You can just pretty well tell the same story in any of those families.
You mentioned that you were the oldest child in your family. How many brothers and sisters did you have?
I had a sister and a brother. My sister was younger than I, and my brother was the youngest of the family.
Well, I was raised by my aunt and uncle, and my folks lived a half a mile north from me, and I was back and forth most of the time, just back and forth. Had a brother.
Now, you lived with your aunt and uncle, mm-hmm. but your folks were half a mile away.
Mm-hmm. Right. My mother was ill when I was born.
Oh.
And the folks said, well, my aunt and uncle always call Mom and Dad. They raised me. And I just, like I said, I had 2 sets of parents almost, but I always was with my aunt and uncle.
Do you remember when you were growing up, did you ever end up living in a dugout or an adobe house? Or
no.
What were your living arrangements like?
We had a frame house and 5 rooms.
That's not a bad setup.
No. We had a frame house and had 4 rooms. One room was large. And that room, my folks divided it into half, and they slept in one half, and my brother the other, and my sister and I slept in one room. And during the Dirt Bowl days, my paternal grandmother had arthritis real bad and was crippled, and we took care of her in the home then. And so we had a bed set up in the front room for her. And that's the way we slept and worked.
When my parents all homesteaded out here, they had a dugout at first. Then later they got married and they had built the house, and that's where I was raised, in the house.
When you say your parents, are you talking about your aunt and uncle or your real mom and dad?
Both of them.
Both sets. Would you say that you were fairly, I'm just comparing like your house, descriptions of your house. It seems like that they were fairly nice houses. And that you might have been, were you considered well off at the time, or?
Well, I couldn't say that you were well off, but, excuse me, my father came from Indiana, and his father was the one who homesteaded. And I have the homestead now. And in 2006, it will be in the family 100 years. And so when they came, grandfather, they had lived in Indiana where they had farms, and they didn't have any things like dugouts or anything.
Right.
And grandfather, they lived in tents till they got their house built. And they built it, and it had plaster on the walls. And then in later years, that plaster didn't look so good, so we had wallpaper. We wallpapered the walls. And the floors, when my grandparents lived there, was old oak floors, beautiful floors. And then they came out with these linoleum carpets, 9x12.
That's what we had on our floors, linoleum too.
And they would put those down. And so, but you know, they worked and saved what they could. And when you get to the Dust Bowl, I'll tell you, I never went hungry, ever. Because we had our own cows, we had our own chickens, we raised our own pigs, and we cured the meat with sugar-cured meat. And we had two vegetable gardens a year. In the spring, we'd plant peas. And
same story here.
See, this is pretty much your early days. And then we'd plant peas and potatoes and green beans and everything that you eat. And then in the fall, they would plant turnips, yeah, and things like that. And we'd have beets, we'd have carrots, we had onions, and we had a big pit. And we put those in the pit, cover them with hay. And then the stuff we raised in the garden, we canned and put it in a cellar. And we'd can thousands of quarts of food every year. So when it comes to saying that, by living on the farm, we didn't have it like people did in the cities. It was bad. And there were some farmers that had pretty bad time.
Mm-hmm.
But it was just great, and I'll let her tell you something about hers.
Well, do you think you were fairly equal with the rest of your neighbors, or were you?
Yes,
were you
alone? Yeah, equal.
Uh-huh. I've heard some stories. We've been heard people were living in not as nice as houses as you all, and it seemed like you were pretty lucky or fortunate.
Out there, neighborhood is more or less the same houses, just frame houses.
My maternal grandparents lived in a house until after World War II, lived in a dugout until after World War II, and their two sons were in...
They lived in a dugout until after World War II.
Yeah.
All right.
That was my mother's people.
All right.
They lived in a dugout until after the war of First World War. And my uncles came back, and they said, you don't have to live in that dugout anymore. So they went out and dug up the soil and made an adobe house, four rooms, and the walls were thick. And in the summertime, you didn't have to have a fan. In the wintertime, it was warm. That's what maternal grandparents did.
Do you remember visiting that dugout when you were little?
Yeah.
Did it seem strange to you that people...
We had a lot of funny things happen in that dugout.
Uh-oh, now you're going to have to tell us.
Yeah, now you're going to have to talk.
Well, we had one of the uncles that came back from World War II. He had been in a mechanic in World War I, not World War II. when he came back from World War One, he had been a mechanic, and he said he went away to he didn't come back to the Oklahoma. He stayed in Iowa and worked as there, and he met a girlfriend. He brought her home, and so she, boy, it was still kind of homestead-like country, you know, and she didn't like that very well. So I had an aunt that was great on everything, and this lady was back in the 20s, and she had, when they did the Charleston and all that stuff, and so she had her knees painted. And so my aunt, we kids down in the basement, we got it all fixed up. We got my aunt fixed up after this lady left, of course. We painted her all up, fixed her all fancy, put on one of those dresses like they wore when they did the Charleston, and painted her knees. And went and told my uncle, say, did you know Vivian is back to see you? What? And my aunt walked in, and he like to die. And that was fun. We had made our own fun in those days. Everything was done in a way that you didn't have any of that stuff.
Were you talking about paint? You mean painted, like painted knees, like painted the legs, like. What exactly are you?
Well, they they'd have. They did it with some. I don't know how they did it with the paint, but it would have a picture of a. Oh, I don't remember what it was now, but it was kind of a picture of something on her knees, and her dress was above her knees when she'd do the Charleston.
So you'd see the funny picture on it.
Yeah, and my aunt, she said, I can't do the Charleston. So my sister and I got out and showed her how to do the Charleston, and when she went in, she was doing the Charleston for my uncle, and he just nearly died.
Mrs. Trimbley, what did you do for fun growing up?
Well, usually I had a horse I loved, more or less on my horse. And then I played with the neighbor kids.
Do you remember your horse's name?
Ranger.
What games would you play, or what would you play with the kids?
Just different, not really games, just being together.
That was entertainment enough for you, huh? Yeah. Just getting together?
We get together a lot of times and do taffy pulls. Pull taffy.
They did more of that out in that community. Yeah. We didn't do that too much at our community.
But it was a lot of fun. But kids would get together and do that. And I learned to play the piano. That was one of my hobbies, was the piano. And we would go have a community together, and we called it play parties. And we'd do the Virginia reel and all that stuff, and there'd be a violinist playing for us, and he'd call us. And then we played, I played on a softball team. And one year in high school, there wasn't enough boys to make the baseball team, so I played shortstop on the baseball team. And the kids would say, we're not playing, there's a girl on that team.
We had, out in that community, have dinners at different, you know, community get-togethers at the folks' different homes on, you know.
How would you have for a typical dinner?
Oh, just, they bring potluck, each one, potluck dinners.
Did you have a specialty that you would make that you or your mother was known for?
She just made different things. She's a real good cook.
Like, oh, here comes the Trimbley ladies with their special.
They were Dixons then.
Every year our school would have a Thanksgiving dinner, and the whole community would be there. And one lady, she raised turkeys, and she furnished all the turkeys, Mrs. Twombly. And the rest of the people just bring the various things that they like to make. And we had a couple of bachelors in the community. and they would bring sourdough bread. So they always had this, had the bread for us.
Was there a big difference between your communities? I mean, it sounds like you were, you did some things that...
We weren't as active as...
Well, you see, the thing about it then, the whole county, sometimes we'd go up on the Bukenton on the ranch in the 4th of July, and you'd go by buggy, and the people would... I don't know. They just kind of looked out for one another. And when it come time to harvest their grain, we didn't have combines or anything. And they'd have big thrash machines. And they'd come around and do the thrashing. And then the women would come and help with the dinner because they would be 20 or 25 men helping one another. And our family had a thing that we butchered our hogs with. And... my first job. Now, this may upset you. I was 6 years old, and they would hang the old hog up and cut him open and take his entrails out, put them in a big tub. And in hog entrails, they have an inside in outside, and then they have a strip in between the inside and outside entrail. And they would put this in a tub, and I had a big old flat board and an old case knife, just blunt knife, and I'd scrape it down like this and put the good thing over here in a bucket of salt water. And then we had a sausage mill. And you'd put the meal, your ham and shoulder and stuff in there and grind it up for sausage. And it'd come out a little spout, and then you'd take this little entrail and put it over here on there. And Mother would have half-gallon jars and half-quart jars. And then you'd wind that up and put it in there, and then they'd can that. And so we had a great big old thing that they put the fat in. And that
black pot,
they did too. And they put the fat in there and boil it down. And you'd have this the old skins. What did they call them?
Rinds.
Yeah, rinds. The rind. And then the fat part would go off. Then the ladies, we would take them. I didn't do that because I was too young for that. They would take this fat then and put lye with it and make our soap to do our laundry with.
We had a lard press, you know. After all, the had the big old pot outdoors, and it all rendered the lard, and then run it through the lard press to get the lard.
And we had that, and the people in the community would borrow our hog stuff to use. And back then, the reason we got along, we bartered. We had something that the community could use, and they had something we could use. And there was a family from northeast Texas that came up, and they had a sugar mill. And we would take our cane over there. We raised cane, and they would make us some syrup out of that. So he would use our hog stuff, and we'd use his.
You said working with the hog was your first job that you remember?
As a first, well, that milking cows.
You remember your first job, Mrs. Trimbley? A job you had that was yours and yours alone to do?
Probably washing dishes. Things like that.
Was there a job that you look forward to doing? A favorite chore you did or something that you did around the house or outside that was your favorite thing to do?
No.
Well, I love the outside. And I would help with the cattle and help with the horses. And a cousin and I, every year school was out, we'd have to clean out the cow barn, the cow lot, the horse lot, and put the manure in a manure, spread it, and take it out and put it on the land. That was our fertilizer. That's what my cousin and I did.
That sounds like it might be your least favorite job.
Well, no, we kind of enjoyed it, and I'll tell you something funny about that. my father and his my cousin's dad chewed tobacco. And that was back when they had it in a block, and they had a picture of a mule shoe on it. And my mother would not let my father chew that back in the house. My aunt would not let my her husband chew it in the house, because a lot of men would spit in the coal bucket. And then to put the coal in the oven, that was awful. So my cousin and I had been out manuring the fields, and his mother came out and gave us a big glass of lemonade. And we looked down there, and there was Uncle Everett's big box. They'd buy it by the gross, buy the stuff by the gross. And he said, "Let's fix that." I said, "How? How are you going to fix it?" "Okay, I'll tell you what to do." So we took out one of those blocks, and we just worked and worked till we got that stuff off. And so we laid it out there, and then we went out and got a cow chip and cut it the same size that plug of tobacco was. And then we put it in wrapped it up in this thing and kind of stuck it down in there. And Uncle come out every morning to do his chores, and he'd get him a plug. In the morning that he found that one, he took a bite, and he just come out and glued. My cousin was in the house, and he and I were herding cattle at that time. He heard his dad hollering, and he knew exactly what it was. So he had all his clothes on except his shoes. And he thought, "Boy, I got to get out of here." So he raised his window to his bedroom and went out and went around the house where they had the cellar to put their canned goods in. And he put his shoes on down there, and he heard his dad talking to his mother, "Where's Everett?" So he went in there, and he couldn't find him. She said, "He was in there a while ago. I don't know where he's at." So Uncle went back out to the barn. So my cousin, he would always bring his horse and his food to eat that day and come across the fields to our place. And I looked out the cow barn, and I was milking, and I said, "Well, there's Nelson walking over here. Wonder what happened to the horse." Well, he got up there, and Dad went out to get some more cows in, and he said, "Odley, we've got a problem. Dad found the tobacco." And he said, "I'll have to tell Uncle Pud that's what they call my dad. Said, I'll have to tell him that I want you to know that horse had something in it. I'll have to take one of your horses." So he told my mother, he said, "Mom didn't have any bread, so she wanted you to fix me some sandwiches." And we went off and herded cattle all day, but I and Uncle had kind of slowed down a little bit.
We had some Hereford cattle, and I always enjoyed rounding up with Dad and him with the cattle, helping out with the branding and stuff.
Was that a hard task to round them up from the...
My horse I just set up there, and it did itself. It was really a trained horse.
It knew what to do?
Mm-hmm.
Did you train the horse? Or when you got the
Well,
horse,
yeah, after? It was... I had another horse called Bunny, and of course had the colt, and his name, it was born. And I went out to the corral and saw my colt, and I looked around and called it Ranger. So I broke it.
Well, was there any people in your family that played music?
Not too much, huh?
You played the piano,
they
you said.
Did.
Yeah, my father and his three brothers were a quartet, just a perfect quartet. And my aunt played the piano, and they sang a lot, and we got together and sang a lot. And then the community would, the whole Cimarron County would have singings on Sunday. And we would go from home up to Keys and over to Kenton and out to Felt and different places on a Sunday, and we'd have songs. And it was the old type songs, you know, that we sang. And that was great, because everybody in the whole county was... That's the way we didn't have TV when in this time. We didn't have radios or nothing. And everybody got together and enjoyed one another.
Folks read, Mother read to us at night a lot. And I remember the book Tarzan. I read that book of Tarzan.
Did you dress up in costumes at all?
Though we had programs at school a lot, mm-hmm. the kids. On the stage, I was in that quite a bit.
You remember any that stand out in your mind that you were in?
Well, I think one, something had flowers, you know, in a little basket. I don't know what it was all about. And then I did take just 1 year of music lessons, and my girlfriend and I, we played the piano at court, you know, duets mm-hmm. at Sandy View. Wasn't like old Lee.
Well, and back then, too, we didn't have football every day in the week or basketball every day in the week. You got together at once in a year. They'd have what they called a spring festival. And all the school districts would come to Boise City to the high school gym. And they'd have piano solos. And my cousin and I played piano duets, and his sister and him played the violin, and I played the piano for an ensemble. And my sister gave readings. She could talk like a man, like a kid, and everything like that. And we had debates. And the whole school, her school would come to Boise City, my school, every school in the county, all the little districts had come. And that was a great time. And we get prizes for it. And
had pie suppers. Remember decorating the pies. pie boxes.
When they'd have things at school, or they'd have, you'd bring a pie and then somebody would buy it.
They'd buy the pies, and then you'd sit with the one that got your pie.
Yeah, whoever got your pie.
Is that how you guys met your future husbands?
I met mine when I had come to work on our place.
Well, that's the way I met my husband.
At pies?
No, he'd come to work at the farm.
Right. And then you would
met that way.
Take it from there.
How old were you when you met your husband?
See, I was about 18.
How old was he?
He's 9 months older than I, so he'd be 20.
What about you? When did
a 19?
You?
I mean,
me. Let's see. I was born in. I'm married in 37. Born in 16. I've been married 64 years.
If you were married in 37, you would have been 30.
I'd have been 58 years.
16 and to 37. I was 20, I think, and my husband was 21. I was 20 and 21. But talking about the pie suppers, there was a boy I was dating, and he'd bid on my pie till he ran out of money. And my husband, he was with Junior Walton. And they decided that Dwight wanted my pie. So he finally got my pie. Made my boyfriend mad, and they about had a fight. And so then after that, my husband dated quite often. And we dated for 3 months, and then we're married.
Wow, a very short engagement.
More or less went together 2 years. Of course, he's worked on the farm and stayed in the old bunkhouse, you know. And we'd go to shows and dances.
What was a typical date like if your boyfriend or fiance came to pick you up, or you'd walk out to the bunkhouse to meet him?
No, he ate with us too, you know.
What would you do on a date?
Well, we went to show. Went to dances. That's what I did.
Well, it was 1936 when my husband and I were going together, and then we were married in January of 37. And his father would give him a dollar. And he'd come and get me, and we'd come to the show. And then we'd go down to the cafe afterwards. We'd buy sandwiches and pie. And my husband would go home with a quarter. We'd go to the movie and things.
You remember your first date? First time you went out with the boy?
Well, it was something at Santa View School. A party there at Santa View School. And then from there it was the picture show and just things like that. Then with the several of friends would be together and we'd all go together a lot of times.
Well, I'll tell you about
a group of us.
Go ahead. When my husband and I were married, it was back then they had shiveries. And they'd do everything in the world they could to you on the shivery. They'd shortchange your bread and, I'd put you in a wheelbarrow and roll you around and everything. So my husband and I decided that they was not going to shivery us. And we had a windmill. And up on the windmill, you have a platform. And so we carried, now this was in January. So we carried blankets one day and put them up there on the, there. And so we just knew pretty well about when they'd be coming to shivery us. So then you give candy and gum to folks. And we hid that under the bed, put the candy and the gum under the bed. And we went outside and got up on that windmill. Laid down up there. Nobody could see us. Covered up with those blankets. They come and they looked in the house and they couldn't find it. And they said, where in the world can they be? Well, they just talking. We could hear them. We want to laugh and we'd just be real quiet. And so pretty soon they said, I bet they're back there in the pasture somewhere. So they went around all over the, around about a mile around there hunting us. Couldn't find us. Well, I tell you what, this just beats anything I ever heard tell of. So they got in their cars and went off. But we waited to be sure they didn't come back. We laid up there a whole hour longer. And when we went in the next morning, they got into the candy and gum.
They'd found it.
That's all they could do.
Chivalries seem pretty obnoxious.
Oh, you don't know. Oh, we just do things like that. You know, back about the Dust Bowl and the Depression, we made our own fun. We enjoyed one another. The people in the community were the same. They took care of one another. You have somebody sick in the community, you go over and help them, and they do the same to you.
Well, do you remember you were both, if you were 16, I was thinking you'd have been about 14 or 15, so when things started to change a little bit, and you would have been a little younger.
I was about 13 when that bad dirt storm came over.
You remember when times started to get a little more difficult? When
1930, and it went on through till the first good crop we had was in 1941. Now we had it, and we had dirt. 1934 and 35 was probably the worst of the dirt storms.
We always managed to have a little crop. They had to use the thistles for the cattle, but we always managed to have a little crop.
How do you think you managed to have something and a lot of people didn't?
Well, I don't know.
Well,
we just
go ahead.
Had slight crops and everything.
Yeah.
In 1934, when it was so bad, we had a milk herd, a registered cattle.
We did and too.
You could milk them, and they could also use them for meat. They were that type of cattle. And so in 1934, we went down on the Beaver River, about two families of us took wagons and had a, back in the early day, you cut the maize off like this. You didn't have a combine. And you had a backboard up here so that you could go along and throw the maize in there. And when we would throw that in there, so we went down on the river there and cut yucca. And what we did, we took a machete and cut all the spines off of the yucca. And then we took those great big, we called them go divers. It was a slender spade. And dig those up by the root. And then we'd throw the roots in the wagon. And there was three families of us. We had three different wagons. And we'd go out on a weekend after school was out on Friday and do it Saturday and Sunday and get a wagon full of those roots. And then when we got the roots there, we brought them home and had them on a great big table like this, only it was about this wide. And then we'd take the machete and cut those into about 2-inch squares. And we had a machine that would grind that up into a powder like. And the yucca plant is a high with protein. And that's what the cattle had to have. And so we would grind that. Then we would put the cows in a stanchion. And then we'd take a bucket, about an old syrup bucket, about a gallon bucket, and take this that had been ground up and put it in there. And then we would get a cake or some kind of oil. It was in a compact in a thing about this big around. And the cows would eat that. And that's what our milk cows did, because we didn't have, in 34, we didn't have enough grass for them. And that's what we... that's what we did in the Dirt Bowl days. And we would, that way then we had 50 milk cows. And my brother and I and father would milk those cows. And then we'd sell the cream. And the cream would be shipped up to Dodge City or somewhere like theirs was. And then we'd have our wheat, and they had a mill in Elkhart, and they would mill our wheat. And that way we had the flour for our bread. And what was those people here in Boise City that had the flour?
Ralstons.
They had it too. And that's the way we had our bread then. And it was off of the farm. It didn't cost you 89 cents a loaf. It had about 2 ounces of wheat.
We had about 6 or 7 milk cows, and we sold cream like they did. And that way we all made cottage cheese.
And when we had
good.
When we had the...
when we sold the cream.
When we had the chickens, when they got kind of old where they didn't lay too good, we'd bring them in here to town and sell the chickens, and people in town would buy them chickens, old things.
Yeah, we used the young chickens.
We used the young ones.
I remember Capper's Weekly magazine, you know, and they'd come out there to scribe the magazine, and they'd take anything, chickens or a battery or...
Yeah.
You trade the chicken or battery
for
the magazine?
No. For the magazines, they just take something like that. Remember that?
We take skim batteries, and it was sort of a barter. It wasn't like it is now. You had to have money to pass out. Money was kind of scarce. And my father...
but I still take the old Capper's wagons. Capper's Weekly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. My father would half sole our shoes. And we had a stand. I think there's one in here somewhere. Be up this high, and then they had a thing that was shaped like your foot. You'd have a small one, the meter side, one up there. And Dad had an awl, and I still have the awl, and I still have these things that he set up there. And he would take her shoe and put it over there, and then he would take the old sole off, And then he would go around and punch holes in there with that awl. And then he would take a little kind of strip of leather and sew through there till they sore on. And then later on in the Depression, they got to where they could put half soles on your shoes with rubber. Like way back, they would fix an inner tube tire. It's not like your tires now. Your tire had an inner tube in it, and it had some stuff they could scrape it off and then put some other stuff on there. And that's the way my father did our shoes.
Do you remember thinking the first time you remember thinking that the times were kind of hard, that things weren't as good as they used to be? Did something happen in particular that brought that to your mind?
I just remember during the Dust Bowl days, the awful dust. And that's when I learned to love grass.
Yeah. In 1927, we had a good wheat crop. And my father bought a washing machine, Maytag washer, with a 5-horsepower motor on it.
Yeah. He had the same thing.
And then they came out with the Electrolux refrigerators that run on propane.
Yeah.
But before then, we had people said, well, what did you do in the early days? Well, we had a big old windmill and a big house that full of water, great big water tank. And the water would come into the tank from the windmill, which would be cold. And on the inside of this water house was where we had our separator, and had a great big trough that ran out to the horse tank.
Yeah.
And she's going to tell you the same thing. Run out there to the horse tank. So we'd milk the cows, and we had a separator that separated the cream from the milk.
Yeah.
We'd put the milk in there and the cream in there and leftover food in there, and we'd eat the leftover food for supper. So you didn't have, never had anything spoil. And that water was cold that went out.
Running right from the windmill to the trough. We still got the old trough laying out there.
And my father had even back in the homestead days, he fixed a pipe, underground pipe from the windmill into the house, and the water would run in to the house, and we'd have a table there with a big old buck pan on it so we could wash it. And when then in the Dirt Bowl days, we had the same thing. We had water in the house, but we didn't have a bathroom.
That's right.
And we didn't have a bathroom. Well, you can write down the same thing for her if you want to. And then we had a wind charger.
Yeah.
In the Dirt Bowl days.
We had a wind charger.
Had a wind charger. And we had a radio. We had Amos and Andy.
We had a battery radio.
Yeah. Well, it run from this wind charger.
We just had lights with our wind charger.
And we had this wind charger out there. And a lot of people didn't have it. But my father would, besides what we did on the farm, had everything to eat and all that. Mm-hmm. They were building roads and a railroad into this part of the country. And Dad would take his horses and a thing and rack up dirt and stuff, and he got so much an hour for that. And that's the way he would buy the sugar and the salt and the stuff like that. And the thing that I learned about the Dirt Bowl days was caring for one another. And that is still with me.
Yeah.
When I see somebody that's having it really rough, and I know it's not a thing that they are doing to make it rough. It's something that's happened to them. And Velma can say the same thing. You want to help them, and you help them all you can, even if it takes a little money. And then helping one another and just knowing one another. And I don't think anybody in this county has an enemy. Now, I would say that. Would you say that there'd be very many people that have an enemy?
No. They don't disagree. They don't agree on everything, but no, as far as I don't know of an enemy, do you?
Well, my father always said, if there's a principle involved, and you know it's a right principle, you stand by it, even if it costs your life. But he said, if you're in a group and one guy's got an idea, and you've got an idea, and you've got an idea, he said, if you keep putting your idea first, and then later on it don't work out, he said, you'd be big enough to apologize for that. Now, that's the way all the people around here were raised, like that. Mm-hmm. You didn't do that. You didn't.
My folks always said, you know how to live, live it right. You live one, got one time to live and one time to die.
And back in the Dirt Bowl days when people were, some of them were leaving, we had a family that was leaving and went to California. Then we had another family that was leaving and they went to Oregon during the Dirt Bowl, but they came back after the Dirt Bowl and still here. But they would come by and they'd say to my dad, Ezra, why in the world are you staying here in all this dirt and all of this stuff? You've got your home, you homesteaded, and you've got this. Why do you want to stay here? Well, my dad said, I want to tell you something. I'm not leaving because it's not always going to be like this. We're going through a time that's hard. And he said, do you think that I'm going to leave a home where my kids have plenty to eat, they have plenty to wear, and everybody helps one another, and go to a big old city and live in a tent and stand in a line to get food? They said, well, Ezra, you're liable to starve. Dad said, no, the land will take care of me. And if it gets bad enough, we can eat snake.
My folks never had any intention of leaving either, because we always got by.
And so my dad stayed, and we stayed, and we went through dirt storm after dirt storm after dirt storm, and we would fix the houses. We'd put sheets up to the windows and then tape the windows outside and in. And, the worst storm was the Black Sunday in April of 1935.
Well, I guess I better go if it's all right.
No, it's not.
It's not.
You have to stay. Tell us, before you go, about the first dust storm you remember.
Well, it was that Sunday one. And it was on a Sunday. And we'd been in town. And we drove out. We saw that old thing coming, and was out of Sandy View School, and we parked there till that thing went over. And then after that, well, we just saw the dirt come up, you know, different times.
Were you afraid when you saw the first one coming?
Yes, I didn't know what in the world it was.
You just stayed in the car?
Uh-huh, we stayed there, and then finally we made it home.
You didn't want to run?
It was a beautiful Sunday morning.
Yeah.
Oh, a beautiful day. Gorgeous day.
Would you say that was the beginning of the Dust Bowl?
No.
No.
That was the worst.
Well, that was a big cloud.
That was the worst storm. We had
wind
dust.
Storm.
We had dust.
Wind blowing.
Yeah.
And dirt. Just, and then we had just piles of sand just everywhere.
Was your dad did he feel the same way about staying?
Yes, he had no intention to leave.
What about, did you have a lot of neighbors and friends that
stayed around the neighbors.
Around
your community? None of them left.
We only had those two from our community.
Did they all feel the same way, that the land would support you guys? Or?
Well, they didn't think, they thought we was nuts. And I had an uncle that left in 1935, and he was mad because my dad and the other two brothers wouldn't go back to Indiana with him. And back in Indiana, you had to pay 50% when you rented a place. You gave your landlord 50%.
Yeah. Well, if you have to leave, I don't want to keep you any longer.
Well, I enjoyed it.
All right. Well, I'm glad you could
help a little.
Yeah, I think you helped a lot.
But the thing of it is, our stories are so near the same, you see.
Yeah.
The things we did. And that, see, she lived way over out this way, and I lived way over out that way.
Yeah.
I live 20 miles that way, and how far is it from here to your home?
10 miles.
10 miles. That's 30 miles apart.
Huh. And it sounds like they were fairly different communities. I mean,
they were different.
What do you think was the difference? I mean, you said your community didn't do all of the social activities.
Most of the social was at the Sandy View School and like dinners at different people's houses. Mm-hmm. Like that.
Why do you think what was the difference between the two communities? Was it?
I don't think there was that much difference.
Not so much different, just different.
Different habits or different practices or something. Yeah. All right. Well, Ms. Trimbley, thank you so much for coming in. We'll be sending you a transcript in the mail.
Is there something quick you'd like to ask me or anything?
Shelley, you've got a quick. The pressure's on. I'm on the spot.
How do you think the Dust Bowl changed who you are?
Yeah, that's a good one.
Change who I am.
You lived through a pretty big time.
Well,
anything
I just like it.
Yeah.
I still don't care for the cities. I still like it.
Yeah.
That's all I can say.
You mentioned earlier that those dust storms made you appreciate grass.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I always wanted to plant grass. And sometimes we even sowed some grass, and I think it'd been best just left some farmland there, but we sold.
Just to have it.
Yeah, okay.
Well, thank you very much for coming in.
Uh-huh. Good to see you, old Lynn.
Yeah, it's good to see you, Velma.
We got it together, didn't we?
Well, we've been friends a long time.
Yeah. How long have you been friends?
Oh, gosh. Since 19 and... Oh, dear. Well, we've been closer friends since about 1950, isn't it?
The folks cooked on a stove like that. We had one of them.
Yeah, we had one of them. And when my husband, after he had asked me to be his wife, he came over and he said, well, I guess I better buy some rings. So at that time we used cow chips. And we didn't have the wood like they have everywhere else. We used cow chips and then put the coal on it. And that cow chip started the fire and the coal would burn. So we put cow chips and some more coal in there and set on the oven door. And had the Montgomery Ward catalog. And my husband said, turned over where the rings were. He said, now you pick out the ring you want. I said, a ring? No, he said engagement ring and wedding ring. So I looked through there and I found what I wanted. So I got a wedding ring, an engagement ring for $25 and some cents. That was my wedding ring. And I wore that until about 1950 and they broke and just fell apart. So I had to get another set, and that was this set here. But that was how we did. And when I saw that stove, I thought, boy, that just brings back. We had the thing up there. You could set the stuff up to keep it warm and everything. That's what we had. Had that kind of a stove till I married. But now the dirt storms, we had a good year in 27.
I'm going to ask you real quick. The $25 for the rings, was that, I mean, I would think $25 would be a lot of money.
Yeah. He thought he was really buying me something that was, he thought he was buying me something that would be really great. And this, look, now it's $400 and $500 they pay for it.
Yeah. That's probably about the same as it was. $25 is probably about the same as $500 now.
I mean, but they were nice rings. And these, I think, when I bought these, they were $300.
I didn't mean to interrupt you. You said in 1927 was a good crop for you?
Yeah, that was when my dad bought the washing machine and the refrigerator for mother. And my grandmother was there with us all during the Depression and the Dirt Bowl. And back to the Dirt Bowls, the Dirt Bowl days. It started in 1930, and I graduated from high school in 1935. And the community always had a big dinner for us, and storm came in, and nobody could come. It was such a storm, and dirt just blew everywhere, and nobody wanted to get out in it. And so then the next day at school, all the school was there for the dinner. We ate up the dinner. And so that was a disappointing thing, was not to have our dinner, and here's the dirt, you know.
You had the big dinner cooked and ready to go?
Yeah, they had it ready for us, and that storm blew in, and it was just terrible. And some days it would blow for... Now, we didn't have the big rolling storms, too many of them. We had a few of them. But they weren't anything like the Black Sunday. That was the worst. But the dirt would blow in, and it would be so dusty, and we'd be out working, and we had to wear a mask to keep the dirt out. And you would... And if the men would get out and they'd lose out, they'd have to put a handkerchief around their face like that to keep the dust out. And there was, in 33 then it got so bad, and in 34 it was worse. And it was month after month after month that there would be the dust would blow. And sometimes we would come into Boy City, and a storm would come up, and it wind always is out of the southwest, mostly. And when we'd get home, the right side of our car would be sanded off.
The paint all gone?
Yeah. Well, it'd be gone enough to where it was just spotty, you know. Mm-hmm. And then the year that I was a senior, I came down with mumps, and then I had scarlet fever. And that was in 35. And back then, they quarantined you. And so we went to my grandmother's, and my mother went there to help take care of me. And my father took care of the things at home. So this April the 14th, got up. It was a beautiful day, and Dad had come home, and what they did, they would burn formaldehyde after they'd quarantined the place and thing. They'd burn this formaldehyde to kill all of that, and they did that about 3 days before then. And so Dad came and said, well, it was safe for us to go home now on that Sunday from grandmother's. And we was going east. And I looked out, and I said, oh, there's a cloud. Maybe we're going to have a snowstorm. And we had to drive 1 mile east and 3 miles south. And when we got home, before we got home, I said, Dad, that thing's awful looking. And he stopped the car because we was going south. He stopped the car, and he said, well, I better put on the gas. And I looked up, and the birds was just flying ahead of that dirt storm, just by groves. And by the time we got into the yard and got out of the car, we got down there and rushed into the house, and Mother lit the lamp. It was dark. 4 o'clock in the afternoon, it was as dark as midnight. You couldn't see your hand like this in front of you. That's how dirty it was. And so Mother rushed and got some wash rags. And while she was doing that, the lights went out. And she said, oh, my goodness, you get on the floor. So the whole family got on the floor with a wash rag up here on her face. And we was there for nearly an hour. And then we kind of get a little lighter and a little lighter and a little lighter. And we got up. And we didn't know what it was. We didn't know what to expect. We didn't know whether the house would still be there, whether we'd be away, or whether we'd die, or what would happen. But none of the other dust storms were that bad. But we'd have sometimes 5 days of dirt in a row, and there would be a kind of a rain cloud come up. And the next morning when you went out, there was little mud dops all over the house, where the moisture in that rain cloud had made mud balls out of the dirt and slap up against the house. So we had a lot of that. And then when my husband and I were married, an uncle had moved to Boy City. And he wanted us to stay on the farm because he had some cows and hogs that he didn't want to sell till the fall. So my husband and I sat on there at the farm. And when we set up housekeeping, my parents, before Dad bought my mother the Maytag washer, we had a wash machine. You'd go like this. It was a steel tin tub. And on each end was a washboard. And you push your harsh up here, and it'd wash them this way. And then you had a thing that rang there to wring your clothes out. And so nowadays, you know, they have great parties for these kids that get married. I went to my grandson's, and of course, they got stuff to fix a house forever. I didn't get that. And our pastor and his wife, they decided they'd have a little thing for us. And she made some tea towels that had Fridays, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and Sunday on them. And so the other kids in the community, that all the community came there. And that was back when you didn't have very much money. And I got 6 sets of salt and pepper shakers. And they were 25 cents a set. And those tea towels was my party. And so my husband and I, we would go there, we'd milk the cows, and sometimes the dust was so bad that we would have ropes. We had ropes that we had tied to the kitchen door and to the barn, and so we wouldn't get lost in the storm. We'd go out there and milk the cows and feed them and come back in. We did the same thing with the hogs and the chickens and everything. And those days, we had 5 days of dirt. We played cards to see who would go feed the calves. The winner would not have to go, the loser would have to go. And then we did every chore that way. And then one day, and we ate sardines. That was our main food when we was first married. We had a table and 4 chairs. If we had company, we could let the table out. We had nail kegs that sat in there, and we'd put a board across there, and that's what people would sit on. Then when they'd get through, why, they'd all gather around and have fun. But we would have my parents over for dinner, and we didn't have very much to feed them, and because I didn't have a garden or anything. And so we did have the chickens, and we had one of those Model T Ford's coop, and the a wheel keep running off of it. So one day the wheel was off and we couldn't get it back on, so we was going over to my father's. And we had a dog, a pup, and we had had a duck and some little geese and and they had the chickens and had the cats. So we was going to walk across about a mile down to my dad's. Look back, and here was, we had a pig that we, my uncle said we could have a pig to butcher of our own when it come time to butcher. And so the pig here come along, and here come the chickens and everything upon us. We had to take them back to there. And this pig was our guard. And people would come to bring the propane to us, and the guy would honk his horn. "Old Lee, come get that hog out of here." The hog wouldn't let him out of the truck. We had a pet dog and everything like that. And then in 1930, well, we had been married in January, and then in 38, why, we didn't have a crop, and we didn't have anything. So Dwight's mother and stepfather lived in Wichita, Kansas. And they just begged us to come to Wichita, and Dwight could get a job there, you know. And so that's where we went then during the war years. But the, you know, a lot of people say, "I don't know how you did that." Well, our father wasn't going to leave the country. He said, "It'll get better. It'll be great someday. You won't know it's the same country." And they taught us to, you put up with what you have to. And my dad's mother would tell us kids when we were small, she'd say, "Now, if you have a problem, anytime you have a problem, you solve it if you can. And don't think you can't, because you can do something to solve it. But if it's absolutely that you cannot solve it," she said, "take it to the Lord and forget it. And if you'll do that, you'll never have ulcers." And that's the way we were taught, you know, the values that we received during the Durst Bowl days are still with us. And if we hadn't have gone through with that, and I had everything just fancy here and fancy there and fancy somewhere else, we wouldn't have cared about our neighbors or anything else. And that's the thing that I see about the dust storm.
So you think it was helpful for you to go through the Dust Bowl experience?
Well, our parents taught us the values of life and things that you should do in life and things you shouldn't do. And like for me and my sister, we have clothes, and if we outgrew them, our cousins, a little younger than us, got the downcasts. And that's and our mothers sewed for us. They, Dad would buy feed sacks, and they'd have flowers in them. They'd have stripes in them. They'd be blocks. And Mother would tell Dad how many feed sacks he'd have to make us a dress. And he would buy them. And then we took the Montgomery Ward and the Sears and Roebuck catalog. And if they had some money, they would order material, and our mothers would make our clothes. And my sister had asthma and hay fever, and she couldn't work outside, so she became the seamstress of the family. And I'd rather be out milking cows and riding horses. And when you talk about kids now that race up and down the road, why do they race like that? Well, when I was a kid, I run a horse like that.
Same thing. Well, anything else?
He's covered.
I think it says, what was it like in your household on a typical day? Mm-hmm. Every morning, my mother read from the Bible for us, every morning. It didn't make any difference what was going on. We had breakfast and we had the Bible reading. And then each one of us kids was taught to pray. And we had to say a blessing before we ate, morning, noon, and night. And then we would go about our daily chores and do whatever we had to do. And like I said, the homesteaders people, the family did the work. You didn't depend on somebody else to do your work. And that was the thing that helped us, because we all had to learn how to work and how to take care of ourselves. And now the people who lived in town, they didn't have it that lucky as we did on the farm. And now today, back then the dirt, and you want to know what caused the dirt storm. When the homesteaders homesteaded, they broke out 40 acres on the land until their homestead was up in 5 years. They had to leave there 5 years. And they did that, and they got it all settled. Then in 1926 was when they started breaking the land out. And in 27, we had the biggest wheat crop that we ever had, ever. It was 60 bushel to the acre. And that's when Dad got to do all these things that he wanted to do for Mother. And then the drought came in 1930. And the wind just blew and blew and blew. And this is... most of the land is the blow type land in this county. Now, I have some land that is not that type of land, but they plowed that up. Well, there wasn't any grass to hold the soil. And then they would try to work, and they go out and work, and that would make it worse. And then when they come along and said, you've got to do something different. And then the soil conservation came in and set up ways to do things. And then the people, my father-in-law worked land that had thistle on it this type, and the sand would blow up around it, and they had to level that out. And you could go out there and see the farm now that he farmed, and it has irrigation on it and beautiful crops all over it. And they didn't have, you just didn't... And how do I like the environment is a thing. And then the government, one thing that we got by with, the government had an FSA thing. And they loaned the farmers money. But in 1934, when we had this with our cattle, we had to cut down on our milk cows and everything. And the government said, we'll give you $17 a cow. And as the only time that I ever saw my father cry. And I cried too. They dug a great big pit out there on the ranch and herded the cows into a place. And they marched them out to this great big hole, and they'd shoot them. And shoot them, they'd fall in there. And then you got $17 a piece for those cows. And that was probably the hardest. But then they had WPA that people could work under during that time. And when I went to college, I went under the NYA, National Youth Association, and I worked my way through college. They paid for my books. They paid for my room. And I worked in the kitchen, in the cafeteria for the school. I worked in the restrooms. I worked in the sewing class. And in the sewing class, they had a school at Fort Supply that was for the people who were mentally ill. And we would make dresses and nightgowns for the women, and undergarments. And for the men, we would make nightshirts and shirts. And if you've ever tried to make a shirt and put cuffs on it and sleeves, that is something. And we had a girl from Texas who was going to school up there. And she was in our class. And the government was going to come out and take a picture of all of us kids that were working our way through school. And she said, I'm going to fix a banner for us. And they came out and up on the building where they took her picture, she had that banner hung, and it had the ISS, great big letters on there. And when the fellas was taking the pictures, one of them said, well, what's that ISS for? Wanda said, that's Insane Search Source. That was my first year of college.
Did you go to Goodwill?
Mm-hmm. Went to Goodwill. And then after we went to Wichita, I went to Friends University there.
Oh.
And that's where I got it. And I worked for a big company there for years. And then Dwight was a railroader for till 1949. And then we come back to take over his father's farms. And then we've been here ever since. But they... A lot of the kids, that was one thing our parents was interested in, was for us to get an education. And we got through high school, had good schools, good teachers, and then nearly all of us went to college and went finished college. My major was psychology and my minor was music.
It's an odd combination.
What?
It's an odd combination of studies.
Yeah, odd combination of studies. But they, I think that, but that's pretty well says all of this. And, we did her laundry when it was storming. We had ropes from one end of the house to the other, hung her clothes inside to dry. But, you know, we had a good life.
Yeah.
It was bad as far as material was concerned and money was concerned. But money wasn't the thing that kept us together.
Right, yeah. All right. I think you did a great job.
Thank you.